This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you that CA is hosting Kids Day, a day for the young and the young at heart, June 23rd from 12 to 3 p.m. at the Hopewell Mini Water Park. And also, Columbia's birthday celebration, celebrating Columbia's 45th birthday with a big bash at the lakefront. For more information, go to www.columbiaassociation.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Josh Stoltzfus, the programming manager of the Columbia Festival of the Arts. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Kind of a slow week to kind of match this rainy Monday, Dennis.
You know, I'm wondering how the people who slept all night in front of Wegmans on Saturday night, Sunday morning, how they felt this morning going to work. People said, well, what'd you do this weekend? Well, I slept in front of a grocery store waiting for the opening. I mean, that was pretty phenomenal. I mean, listen, we're happy Wegmans is here. They opened yesterday on Father's Day at 7 a.m. on a Sunday, and there were 2,000 people waiting to get in.
You know, I'm just as excited about Wegmans as the next guy, but I got to tell you, I don't get it. it's a grocery store.
It's a wonderful grocery
store.
It's
got cool
store.
Stuff.
Yes.
It's a grocery store on steroids. And believe me, I love Wegmans. I've been to the Hunt Valley Wegmans. I love Wendy Webster, but I don't get it. In fact, there's this one lady that apparently this is her sixth opening.
There's a group of them. They call them the Wegmans women. I mean, yes. they have traveled.
This is her sixth one, and don't get it.
I grocery shopping is one of those things you kind of have to do. So, you know, it's I don't consider it a special occasion, even in a nice store like Wegmans. But, you know, some people are very excited about it. Welcome to the town. It's a phenomenal. It's twice the size of your basic grocery. If anybody's listening, it's hard to conceive that nobody's ever been in a Wegmans before, but still some people have never been in the store. And to see what the big deal is, well, it is a big deal.
Dave, our producer, is waving. I've never been there.
You've never?
Never been there.
Dave has never been.
You know, it's funny. Wegmans has everything sort of a little bit nicer than the other grocery stores. And one of the things that they've been sort of touting is this cart conveyor that they have that hauls shopping carts from the store on the first floor to the parking lot on
the second floor, right.
Yeah, well, that broke the first day. So.
It's funny because when I read that, there is a, it's kind of a neo-urban development down in Annapolis called Annapolis Town Center at Parole. I love that. Annapolis Town Center at Parole.
Well, that makes it neo.
Well, it's not in Annapolis. It's not in the town center of Annapolis. It's in Parole. But anyway, you can name anything you want. They have a Target there that is in a parking garage where they have one of these elevators or escalators for shopping carts. And I think that's the first one that's ever been around here. Apparently, it's
a cool concept.
It's a cool
especially
concept.
Especially when it works.
But yeah. Opening day, you get swamped. That's the kind of thing that breaks down.
So we had opening day for Wegmans, but we still don't have a liquor store.
We still don't have a liquor store.
They had a hearing, I guess, last Thursday night.
Yeah.
And the idea of having this Wegmans liquor store, this liquor store attached to Wegmans, is still in the works.
Well, it's separate, we should say, that it's a separate entity.
It is, but this latest rendition of data that came out really kind of talked about how it's really connected and how you really can't get into the liquor store.
You have to use the same loading dock.
Yeah, exactly.
So the merchandise got to go.
As the facts emerge, it really brings it a little closer.
And I guess the big issue this has is that the majority, the 90% owner of the store, is the husband of Wegmans' president. So he's, you know,
in and of itself, that doesn't bother me.
No,
you know,
but that's what the liquor board said. They want him to come to the hearing, and I think that's a fair request.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, you know, eventually, hopefully they'll prove it eventually, but I think certainly to mollify some of the critics, let him come. But you know, I was reading some of the comments. Apparently, down in Prince George's County, in Woodmore Town Center, where they also have a Wegmans that opened recently. There is they sell, for whatever reason, I think in Prince George's County, they can sell beer and wine in that Wegmans. I didn't know that. But they said there's a liquor store that opened just a couple doors down from it.
I don't know.
So as far, it's not going to hurt competition, which then kind of brings us to some of the people have said, well, will Wegmans, what will Wegmans do to the Owen Brown Giant?
Well, you can go and talk about Giant, but before you go there, I just wanted to say it was funny because George Borman, who is the part owner of the Northridge Wine and Spirits in Ellicott City, he said that this isn't about limiting competition. This is about allowing a grocery store, a chain store, a box store, whatever you want to call it, having a liquor license.
No,
George, it's not. This is about competition.
Nice try.
So let me understand this. On principle, you're now, fighting this? I don't think
no,
so.
No. It's about competition. Come on. Call it what it is. But the other comment was about whether will it hurt the Owen Brown Giant, which is a union grocer. And, the whole union versus non-union thing. And the unions have made no bones about it. They've done everything in their power to try to stop Wegmans' expansion. And so now they're here. It'll be interesting to see what happens to those stores. But I will tell you, I think Giant, my own personal opinion, Giant upped their game when they started these the Scan It program where you can, you do the whole shopping trip by yourself. You pick up the laser thing and you go through and scan your. That's made me a regular shopper.
Yeah, you know what? This is going to be a whole philosophical debate or conversation. But you know what? This is exactly what competition does.
It makes everybody better.
Sharper.
It raises the bar.
And this is the problem the government just doesn't understand.
I would agree.
Anyway. So we have a new superintendent, Renee Foose, who's starting, hasn't even started yet. And she's already presented her 90-day plan.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
To come in. I don't know if that was her own doing or if that was something that the Board of Education had asked for. But I kind of wanted to run through those because... I think they hit on some of the issues that have been near and dear to other guests of ours and talking about some things that I think really need to be addressed in our school system. Albeit it is a great school system, but there are things that need to be fixed.
Yeah.
So one of the things that obviously she wants to do is to continue having it be a world-class education system. And I think that the notion there is for everyone, and I think that was really what she was focused in on. It's not just a matter of continuing it being a good school system for those that excel, but also making it a great school system for those that aren't always excelling at the same level.
Yeah.
And what I thought was interesting was her second one, building trust and confidence through transparent communication. And guess who jumped all over that and was all excited?
Mr. Dyer.
He was so excited, and he actually had something positive to say.
He
doesn't come out publicly with much that's positive.
No, he doesn't. But, that's his main thing about, openness and... it'll be interesting to see how she works with the unions.
It will.
She's, I think she's starting good. Here's where I want to get. But it's a huge job. And this was also brought home to me. We were talking at lunch. I spent the weekend at my college reunion up in Cleveland. And one of my classmates, unbeknownst to me, I said, what are you doing these days? Well, I'm superintendent of schools. I said, wow, really? I said, where,
did you feel inferior?
His school district, yeah, it's like, wow, pretty good. One of my classmates really did well. He's a superintendent of the schools. And then I started to say, well, how big's your school district? It's like 2,000 students. In Pennsylvania, they're much smaller. And so I said, wow. He said, well, how big's the school district here? I said, I think we got like 50,000 students. He says, oh, you're one of those.
I do think Howard County school system is one of the largest
in the country. So it's a big job. It's a lot to get your hands around. I think we did well in Detroit, but I like the fact that she starts July 1st and she's already like hit the bricks running.
And just to finish off the point, because I don't want to start a list of five and having only done two. She does want to also build a culture of collaborative governance and workforce engagement. And again, I think this is tying into wanting to make sure that there's open dialogue and communication, leveraging communications and technology innovations, and aligning organizational structures and resources. And these are her five bullet points. And, when you really dig a little bit deeper into each one of those, I think they each hit on an issue that has been raised in the last maybe 5 or 10 years of problems that we have in our school system.
So I couldn't agree more.
It's going to be interesting to see.
It is. I was happy to see in the paper yesterday, doing my reading as I got back in town, got caught up, that there's been two applicants for wineries under our new winery legislation here in Howard County. One of which is Don Ruhr and his partners out at his farm out there. And
I thought that was kind of funny.
Why did you think that was funny?
I don't know. I feel like Don Ruhr just kind of jumps on bandwagons. And what can he do next? And
Yeah, well, you know, Don is, he's been a
pretty... He's an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
He owns 300-plus acres out on Jennings Chapel, and you know what? If he can make a go of it, you know what? That's great.
Not bad for a former social studies teacher in the Howard County school system. That's where
is that
he came
what he was?
Yeah, I think it was social studies. I might have the subject wrong. But, yeah, he started his career as a teacher in the Howard County school system.
And, look, in fairness, he is a part owner of Iron Bridge. You know, a well-reputed, you know, wine bar. So, you know, I guess
makes
sense.
He's a developer. He's built some homes. And, you know, Donzel made a good name for himself locally. And, you know, I'd be interested to see if he does what he does with the winery out at his farm.
So speaking of land use issues, I'm going to kind of jump right on the title of this article out of the Baltimore Sun because I think it hits it well. Haunted by Comp Light Battles, Allman proposes changes to the rezoning process.
Remember Comp Light?
Yeah, remember Comp Light back in the mid-2000s, and what a debacle it was. You know, they kind of changed up the process and made it a legislative process instead of it having been one that worked through the zoning board.
Right.
And while this is somewhat of a technical issue, what it really did, it really opened up that whole process for a lot more scrutiny and court challenges and veto by the county executive.
Oh, my God, it was a mess. There was a referendum.
It was a disaster. Yeah. And then there were add-ons, and it created Comp Light, which was this process that was going to be finished off.
And then citizens said Comp Light was unconstitutional. You can't do that. You have to do it when you're supposed to.
So I'm not sure exactly what County Executive Ullman has proposed is the solution to this problem, but I do give him credit for addressing this head-on. I think it does need to get addressed, and I do think they need to figure out a way to make this be a lot smoother than it was first go around.
You know, and zoning is always one of those issues for like the local, the really hyper-local wonks like us and, you know, people like Joan Lankos. But, you know, everybody, that's when people really get to know their local government, when a zoning issue affects them or their neighborhood. And so Comp Light, getting that thing straightened out, I think, is a step in the right direction.
And speaking of sort of wonks, I think you had put into your blog, thank you. Yeah. We're the podcast, you're the blog.
Yeah.
that you had gone to Jen Tarasa's fundraiser last week, and that you sort of found her to be a little bit of a land use geek or something
like
that.
Yeah, she said she's a self-proclaimed land use geek.
And it's really unfortunate that Jen once again has refused to come on our show. And in honor of that, I think at the suggestion of our producer, we are going to start a list of our biggest fans and those who most want to be on our show.
Right.
So led by Liz Bobo.
Liz Bobo.
And now we have Jen to add to the list.
Should we call it the Liz Bobo Club? And Jen is now in the Liz Bobo Club?
We could do that.
And then there's that Liz Bobo Club has a new member. Jen. Now, I should say, Jen didn't refuse to come on. Councilperson Jen Tarasa did not refuse to come on the podcast.
She's speaking to us face to face.
She just didn't respond.
Jen, you know the numbers, you know the texts, you know the emails.
Actually, you know what, Jen? We're not invited. We stopped trying. We've tried, we've begged, we've cajoled, we've pleaded, and...
In fact, Dennis even cried on my shoulder one afternoon.
It wasn't pretty.
It was not pretty.
And speaking of politicians, no, this is not to... We actually had an interesting conversation at lunch today that, you know, Howard County, in any of our recent memory, has never had a big political scandal. We've never indicted a corrupt politician. We've never had
Or even a non-corrupt politician.
Or even a non-corrupt one. No, you know, outside of the Alan Dyer impeachment on the school board, we really haven't had any kind of political trials or controversies here. And that's not to be said that for, we can't say the same thing about the city of Baltimore and some of the other Baltimore County. Prince George's County. I didn't say Prince George's County right away because they get beat up a lot, PG County does. And kind of rightfully so.
Yeah, they make their own bed.
They do, because, and they're in the news again this week. And I know this isn't a Howard County story, but I just love the irony of this story. Last week, Delegate Tiffany Alston, a Prince George's County delegate in the House of Delegates, was found guilty for stealing $800 from her General Assembly budget to pay an aide in her law office or something. And apparently it's only one of many problems that she has. But she, even though she's been found guilty, she has told everybody she doesn't intend to resign her seat. And this happens on and on because there's a loophole in Maryland law, as we've said, that you really don't have to resign, or you can't be removed until you've been sentenced. I mean, that's what the law, apparently that's a law that's been,
you know, I'm going to challenge the word loophole, because loopholes are unintended consequences of a law.
Yeah.
Given that this loophole, as you call it, benefits those that create the laws, I question whether it's really not a loophole or whether it was intended to be exactly that, giving elected officials the opportunity to stay in office.
Yeah. Well, and now it's kind of been recognized because this went through last year with, there's been several. Leslie Johnson was on the Prince George's County Council after being convicted. She was not going to resign. And, you know, there are a couple of the officials who have stayed in office after being convicted or are found guilty. And so the legislature actually has taken steps to close that loophole or close what you didn't like calling a loophole. And of all people that was a co-sponsor of that bill, Delegate Tiffany Austin. So
the irony of all ironies. But let's see if it really passes, and let's see if she really votes for it.
Right. Before we get into our guest,
Josh, talk about Columbia Festival of the Arts. Let's talk about the other Columbia.
Well, you know, this weekend was the Lake Fest, which is a big weekend in Town Center, part of Columbia Festival of the Arts. But next weekend is Columbia's birthday, and Columbia Association wants you to know they got a couple things going on. Our sponsor on Saturday they're having a Kids Day. On June 23rd, from 12 to 3 at the Hopewell Mini Water Park. Did you know that Hopewell had a mini water park?
I did not.
I didn't either until I read this. They'll have a fun-filled day with children's entertainers, moon bounce music, raffles, games, and more. For more information, visit columbiaassociation.org/events. But also on Saturday, this is a real Columbia thing. They'll have a birthday cake. They'll have, you know, happy birthday, Columbia. Have a big
Jim Rouse's face.
But, you know, another big weekend down at the lakefront. And then, again, this is all Columbia Association. And also, all summer long, they're trying to keep things going at the lakefront. They've got free outdoor movies every Monday and Friday at dusk. Free outdoor concerts Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Friday nights, they got Dancing Under the People Tree at 6:30 p.m. So,
will you be there? Dancing under that tree?
You know, I saw it one time. There were like three people dancing, so really they need more dancers. It was a little slow, but hey,
it's something. You know. Josh, welcome.
Gentlemen, great to be back.
Thanks for coming back. We unfortunately were not able...
2 years ago, right?
I think it was 2 years, yeah. Unfortunately, didn't get you back prior to Lake Fest, and we're kind of just kicking off, I guess, the festival.
We had just a couple things going on I had to take care of right before Lake Fest.
So,
just a few details to wrap up.
Well, ordinarily we would have had you on as you were getting your Lake Fest set like we did last time.
That's what we did in 10, yeah.
Yeah, but this is the Monday edition of our Friday show. So.
We can Monday morning quarterback
right,
it here.
But you know, just because Lake Fest is over doesn't mean the festival is by any means over.
No, it's actually just getting started. Yeah. But before we do that, how did Lake Fest go?
Tremendous. Actually, I think in the 5 years that I've been doing this, I think it was probably the most successful Lake Fest we've had. Steady attendance throughout.
We had a fabulous weekend. It was just beautiful.
I mean, the weather couldn't have been better.
I ran into Michael Hickey yesterday when I stopped down, and he said you sold more beer Saturday night than you did all of last year.
I don't doubt it. I honestly don't doubt it. Our friends at Ellicott Mills Brewery were down helping us out again. They do a great job. We've put together a new beer garden concept, which is at the top of the hill.
Yeah, I like that.
Where the hug is, if you know that, by the hedge. We had wineries there this year as well, so there was diversity of offerings, and, you know, the weather, I think, had everybody in a great mood, and people wanted to get in a better mood.
You know, how you bring alcohol into an event.
It helps the mood.
Lightens everything up a little bit. It's awesome.
Well, you know, you did a couple other things different this year, too. There were, instead of having all the craftspeople under the parking garage, you brought them back out to Lakefront. I think that was a huge difference.
I agree, and, you know, it's the first year that we've done that. In the past, for people who've been, they know that the garage over at Cope, and there's a covered garage, and we had 40 or 50 vendors in there, and then we had maybe a dozen or 20 scattered out through the grounds as well. Through various reasons, you know, some of them not our choice, some of them that we were re-examining and figured out how to do this, we decided to bring everybody out and really close the footprint of the festival to bring people together and, you know, have a little more sense of community so it's not quite so fragmented.
No, it really, you know, again, Sunday afternoon probably wasn't one of your busier times, but it felt busy.
That's exactly, yeah, even when it was slow, and we have certain slow periods when we're getting started, 12 to 1, 2 o'clock each day, it still felt like there was things going on.
Yeah.
We had everyone together, and, I mean, really that's what this is about, and the more you can get to know people that are coming down, either see old friends or neighbors, or meet new folks and experience this together, the better, as far as we're concerned.
And you know what struck me is, as we've talked about this whole Town Center redevelopment program, and you've seen, you know, some architects have done some architectural renderings of what a vibrant downtown would look like if we'd done this. that's what it looked like. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would look like exactly those drawings. You know, there were street, you know, street vendors and just a lot of activity and people milling around. Yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah, we had some tremendous photos. There's a lot of stuff up on Facebook right now. And, you know, I was looking at some this morning and maybe a half a dozen ones sitting there with one of my colleagues. And I'm like, you know, this is what the festival is about. I mean, you know, perfectly capturing that.
Yeah. Now,
but you know, it's interesting. Part of the whole downtown urban feel idea is to bring people together. And I think when you bring people together, it sort of breeds a feeling of, I want to do more of this.
Of community.
So when you kind of, as you said, decrease the size of the footprint and you brought everyone together, mm-hmm. I think it felt there was more energy and it just felt more fun and it felt like I'm here as a part of something bigger.
And speaking of the energy, you bought March 4th. Marching band.
Yeah, speaking of energy.
Those guys are fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and honestly, we had them last year, of course, was the first year that they were here. For people who don't know, it's an 18-piece marching band, not marching band in the traditional sense.
I wouldn't call them a marching band in the traditional sense.
It's only in the name. They've got an electric bass player.
They do march.
They did parade a little bit for us. But it's just high energy. It's fun. And it appeals to a wide range of ages, which is something that's very important to the festival. And, you know, they really brought it again. I sometimes you have some hesitation about bringing an artist back, back-to-back years.
Yeah.
And it did cross my mind, but once they were here and once I saw people, their reaction to them and their faces, I was like, that concern just slipped away.
As I commented on my blog this morning, you can't watch them without smiling.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
Or tapping your toe. I mean, it was just, the energy was incredible. But we also talked about, you can't bring it back a third year in a row. I mean, at some point
I probably wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, at some point it saturates. So the trick is you got to find another one.
That's right. And, you know, actually we were looking for an act like that. And, you know, they're very unique. Didn't find anything that was comparable.
But you've had, you know, you've had things in the past that have resonated with the community. That they've mm-hmm. really, I can't remember, one year was those people on those,
talking about Strange Fruit.
Strange Fruit. That was a great show. They were. How do you describe what they were on? I'm having.
Well, it's kind of like a giant. I almost want to say pogo stick in a way. But imagine it being 20 feet high and it's sprung. So once you're on top of it, it sways with the movement back and forth in any direction.
And they had these weird. I mean, it was truly Strange Fruit. But that resonated. The people really liked that. So I think you're finding. You're learning about what your community likes too.
That's exactly right. And I would say that happened the year before that I started, and that was, in a lot of ways, the launching pad for some of this other stuff that we've been doing the last couple of years, because we realized that we had hit on something that resonated with the community.
Right.
And trying to find something, not the same thing, obviously, and you would never find something, just like you can't find another March 4th, you can't find another Strange Fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
But in that world and trying to find something that we can bring back. And so we're constantly looking.
You know what? But it's interesting because if the event is only once a year, mm-hmm. you know, no, you don't want to bring them back a third year. But if it's the kind of thing that people love, you know, maybe not next year, but you could probably bring them back in a couple years again. And, you know, people would look forward to coming back and seeing them.
And you've done that with some of your ticketed events.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Have, you know, Second City has been here before. And
that's right.
You bought them back.
Some of the events this year, in fact, are artists that have been here in previous years as well.
So tell us about some of those.
Well, you know, as I think you talked about earlier, this is the 25th anniversary of the festival, the founding of the festival.
Right.
And to that end, one of the things that we wanted to do when we were talking about programming was we do want to look back some, bring back some of the artists that we've had here in the past, and then also while looking forward as well. You know, to that end, we're bringing back Flying Karamazov Brothers, which is the comedic juggling group from New York. They've been around for, you know, almost 30 years now at this point, been with the festival, I would say, maybe two or three times.
Yeah, at least twice, I'm pretty
yep.
sure.
Extremely popular, appeals to, you know, people from age 5 to 75.
Right.
I mean, it's not a family show, but you can bring the whole family.
Yeah. And why is it not a family show?
maybe a poor choice of words. It's not that there's anything that's unsafe for the family, but like when you say family programming, a lot of times people think, you know, puppets and, you know, something that the adults wouldn't like.
Right. There'll be adult humor.
It's like Cirque du Soleil. It's the kind of thing that's not intended for kids, but it would entertain kids
exactly.
as well.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, right. Yeah. And they're actually...
I just want to clarify that.
No surprise.
Picking.
There'll be no surprises there in that sense. And they're actually, we're very fortunate because they're going to do a juggling workshop for us that same day.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so...
Where will they do that?
It'll be at the Rouse as well in the Black Box Theater there at 3:30. 3:30 to 4:30. So there's still room. We have a few spots left. If you want, just...
Wait a minute. You said at the Rouse.
Yep.
And the Rouse has a black box theater?
Yeah, interesting. They just redid it. The space was always there, but it was just... they fixed it up. They got new sound. They put a fresh coat of paint on it. It looks great.
I did not realize that.
Yep.
So we're talking about the Jim Rouse Theater at Wild Lake High School.
Yep. Right. In the Black Box Theater, 3:30 on Saturday before the show.
I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that there was even a black spot. Because you think black box, you always thought Howard Community College.
Right. Yeah. It's a similar type space, but it's its own thing. And I think they're just starting to do programming in there with their own organizations and people within the school. So it may be not known now, but it will be soon.
Yeah. Very cool. I learned something every day. That was it.
What else do you have on the agenda?
Well, some other artists that we're bringing back. Of course, the finale of the festival is Momix. It was a modern dance company.
I saw them when they're another one. Two, three times they've been here?
Actually, it's been, you're probably right.
They haven't been back in a while.
It's been a while, and one of them, they're one of the earliest acts that have been at the festival. So we're reaching way back. I think maybe the first year they were here was 90, 91.
And now, I'm not a dance guy.
Right.
You know, I usually just kind of...
Now, come on. You're not a dance guy?
I'm not a dance guy.
But he will be dancing under the people tree.
I don't dance under the people tree. I mean, you put enough beers in me at a good party, and yeah, I'm up there dancing.
Right.
But to sit through an evening of a dance performance is not high up on my list of things to do. I'll go back and see Momix.
Absolutely. And that's really what's great about that group is because... And I'll say the same thing. Actually, my background is music. I grew up playing it. I went to school for music, and that's really my specialty. But dance is something I've learned a lot about at this organization, and I always find out something new. And a company like that is exactly what you're talking about, Dennis. If you don't like dance, forget what you think you know about it. You come out to a Momix show, and it is so visually stunning.
Yeah, you'll be dazzled.
It's a spectacle is what it is.
And the music, it's almost ethereal.
Yeah, exactly right.
I don't get to use the word ethereal very often, so... I reached down for that one. You're looking at me.
Wow. Come on, it's a contagious feeling.
It's an arts discussion. We can use words like that. No, but I mean, they use puppetry, multimedia. The music, as you alluded to, is a really crazy cross section of different styles and mashups.
I think Paul hit it right. If you Cirque du Soleil kind of ish,
it's in that world.
Yeah,
yeah. There's no question about it. Momix, and that's the last show we do on the 30th, and that's also at the Rouse.
Well, what else you got? You got some other stuff going on besides the.
Sure, yeah. There are other ticketed events that we have are one of the things I'm most excited about, as I said, as a musician, is on Friday we have Roseanne Cash here.
Wow.
Yeah, great singer-songwriter. Like a lot of folks, she's probably most known as Johnny Cash's daughter for the casual fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the music fans, people know her for the incredible career that she's had, 11 number one hits on pop, country.
No kidding.
Yep.
So I would know that. Would you know that, Paul?
I actually did.
Yeah.
She has a... Yeah.
Going
about 11 of them? I mean,
you know, she's one of those people that has done much better from an awards perspective than her reputation would lend you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other people out there that are all popular and whatever and probably have no reason to be popular.
Right,
shouldn't
right.
be. My kids listen to a lot of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got you on that.
Well, I will say from my own personal experience, one of the jobs that I had before I was at the festival, and this is going back 12, 13 years, was working for a booking agency, and one of the acts that we booked was Roseanne. And again, I didn't know her other than her family name, and we went to the show that we were working, and was just blown away. I mean, her ability to get over with an audience, to tell a story, to get her own songs across, but also reinterpret classic songs as well. You know, it's really interesting because she is, when you have someone like that who has a family name that is so strong, to be able to carve out your own career for yourself, but then also to be mature enough and sure enough in your own career to circle back and start embracing that family aspect of what you do. And that's really what she's done on her last record.
Yeah.
Her father at one point, when she was very young, talking to her, said, well, you know, Roseanne, we should do this song when we're on stage. And she said, oh, Dad, I don't know that. And he looked at her weird, and it came up again. It was something else like, you know, we're going to do this Hank Snow song or whatever. I don't know that one.
And what do you mean you don't know that?
Yeah.
How can you not know that?
Right, exactly.
What's wrong with you?
Exactly right. So he, you know, took us some time, and he came up with a list of what he said were the 100 essential country music songs. And he gave it to her, and he said, you know, Roseanne, this is your education.
You need to know
you
these songs.
You need to know this. And she sort of put it away for a while. Again, she did her own thing. But that was always a part of her life. And then now, like I said, at this point in her career, she went back to that list. She has kids of her own, so she's thinking of those types of things again as well. She's making her own list for her own daughter, who's a musician.
Who will also put them away for 20 years.
And so her last record...
Honey, let me tell you about these songs from 1867.
You know, way back in 1980, we used to do these songs. So she did a whole album of about a dozen of those songs that her dad had chosen. And, you know, people like Bruce Springsteen are on it, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, a whole bunch of folks like that. So be anxious to hear her do some of those, do some of her own hits, and just a really, really strong performer. If you're not familiar with her at all, you know, take a chance, come on out here.
When's her show?
This is this Friday. Rouse Theater, 8 o'clock show, and we got a tremendous local act, Luke Brindley, who's going to do 30 minutes before she comes out.
Wow.
Yep.
A local musician.
Yeah, he's out, why local? I mean, Virginia.
Yeah.
So he's got his own thing happening right now. He's got a strong band that he's with, but he's still doing solo stuff, and we're going to have him out for get everybody
warmed up.
Now,
is that something the festival wants to do? Let's also bring in some regional guys to this?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we have done in the past is often that's a spotlight that we do at Lake Fest.
Right, right.
But this is really the first time in a while that we've had someone regional who's going to come in and work one of our...
On a ticketed
our,
events.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. So we're excited about that opportunity. And
tickets
I know,
still available for friends?
Yep, and I know Luke's fired up about doing it, so...
Awesome, awesome.
Any others you want to highlight?
A couple other things. We're going to have the On Trio, which is a modern classical trio, something that the festival hasn't done in a while. That'll be something new for us. You know, Candlelight Concert Society does tremendous classical music presentations in our area.
Yeah.
So often, you know...
So it's a trio. What do we have in the trio?
They're piano, violin, and cello. They're born in Korea, trained at Juilliard. They're all sisters.
Nice. Hmm.
Very modern, not in the sense that modern, you can't make sense of the... the word.
Right.
But, you know, they do not make the distinctions. Like, this is classical music. So they're going to come in and, you know, there'll be some jazz, there'll be some pop, rock, classical music, but it'll all be filtered through their training as classical musicians.
And when's that show?
Sunday at the Smith Theater over at the college.
Okay.
And it's a matinee, so we're doing it at 3 o'clock. And a great opportunity to meet them afterwards after the show that we'll have.
Okay.
And also, I should mention with the Roseanne show as well, there'll be a special drawing to do, I think, 10 patrons for a special meet and greet after the show.
Wow. That's
yeah, so
cool.
Great opportunity to come out and see her and also meet her in person.
Okay.
A couple other things. I think that one of the other shows that is similar to last year in performer but different in the actual show, I know our producer here, Dave, was at the one-man Star Wars show last year.
Oh, yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah. it's Lord of the Rings this year, right?
Lord of the Rings. Yeah, he's back. Yeah, so he's...
is this funny? I mean, is it...
It's I love it, you know, but it's of a...
It helps to have read the books to appreciate the show.
Yeah, or have seen the movies. I mean, yeah. I don't think you need to have read the books, but if you've seen the films, because a lot of the performances that he is essentially mimicking and riffing on and having fun with are based on the films themselves, not the books.
Okay.
So you don't need to have read them, but if you've seen The Lord of the Rings or even vaguely familiar with it...
Dave, you like the Starman show? I mean, the Star Wars show?
We got an affirmative nod,
and he's a fanboy of Star Wars. We know that.
Yeah, and this is a really strong show. He's incredibly funny, and it's one of those things that we've tried in recent years to bring in an audience that has sort of been somewhat elusive for us. In that, I would say the 25 to 35, 40-ish.
Yeah, that's interesting because your audience is much older. Has been.
There are certainly for certain shows that is the case, and as we're looking for and trying to develop that new audience, we're trying to find people in that 25, 40, and there's a lot of young people in this community now.
You know, going back to Lakefront for a minute or mm-hmm. Lakefest for a minute. What was phenomenal? You had a great weekend. You had great crowds.
Yep.
You think maybe record breaking for the festival?
Well, it's definitely the best I've seen in 5 years.
Yet at the same time, you had this huge thing going on just down the road in Baltimore.
Yep.
So the festival can go head-to-head with other things happening in the area
and
still stand out well.
I think so, yeah, and that speaks to what we were talking about earlier and the things that we've been developing in doing those new spectacle-type performances, Strange Fruit, March 4th Marching Band. We're developing and that type of programming and getting a reputation for that, I think people are coming down and expecting that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, Josh, as you look forward to... maybe next year's, and I know you're still trying to get through this year's.
Yep.
As you start to plan for subsequent years, what kind of things do you look at to kind of tweak and tune up and do different to keep it vibrant and fresh and entertaining?
Well, every year is a learning experience. I mean, there is no question about that. One of the things that we're always trying to do is maintain a balance across artistic discipline and genre within those disciplines, and then appeal across a wide range of ages and culture. So that's, in and of itself, is kind of a tall order. And then
a big matrix, almost.
Yeah, well, and then you got to factor in the availability of all the performers.
Right.
And because we're just wedged in this short 16-day period. And so there are, in some ways, it's kind of like a game of, I don't know, Tetris in a way.
Right.
Would that be a way to explain that?
Yeah, I think so.
But as far, I think that what we have to do is, in terms of vibrancy and making sure that there's something new every year, is that we do want to embrace the history of the festival, and like I said, bring back some of the artists that we've had, but looking forward to new things. We're trying to always go to new conferences to see new acts, staying in touch with colleagues, and then really, more than anything, listening to the community.
Hey, you know, one of the things I just occurred to me, in past years you've had birdhouses, you've had clocks, I think. Was there a community art project this year? Did I miss that yesterday?
Oh, it was at the top of the hill, right by the American City Building. The concept was boxes and bowls. We had these handmade decorative boxes and serving bowls that were designed by artists that participated. We had probably about 40 different artists on display.
Wow. And where are they now? Are they broken down, or will they move around with the show?
Exactly. Exactly. We'll bring, I mean, probably not every one of them to every show, but most shows will have a small display that we'll bring out so that people can see them. The unique thing about that project is, you know, these are your friends and your neighbors, and maybe some people you didn't know who were
artists. The artists amongst us.
Exactly. Exactly right. I mean, there are people that participate that you know are notable local artists.
Right.
But then I'm always surprised that people walk in the office and they have one of these finished products, and I go, I had no idea you did that.
And you usually get, like, a local celeb to do one, too. Like, did the county executive do a box or bowl?
He didn't. I don't think so. No.
We'll have to get on him when he comes on our show.
I'm surprised they haven't asked you, Dennis.
you ever see me paint? You wouldn't do one.
There's still time, you know. We can get you on there.
Not a good idea.
Josh, sounds like you have a great lineup this year. I wish you lots of luck with it. If people want to get tickets or want to learn a little bit more information about what's coming up the next couple weeks, how can they get some additional information?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the website's a great source, of course, which is ColumbiaFestival.com. We have a strong Facebook presence as well. Ticketed information, there are different ways you can get them. One of the best ways to get seats right now is tickets.com, which is, of course, their site.
Right.
And their phone number, which I believe is 800.
He's looking it up.
I got it right here. Hold on. 800-955-5566.
Excellent.
And then also, if you can still order through the mail or fax with us.
Okay, sounds great.
Before we do wrap up, though, one other thing that struck me this weekend that I would encourage people to pay attention to as they go to the ticket advances and other things that you have, is that banner that was hanging by the fountain of all the people that contribute to make the festival happen. People don't realize it takes a lot of money to put this stuff on, and a lot of companies have stepped up.
Yeah, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, because that's known as the Giving Wall. We have all of our sponsors listed on there. You know, people who...
It's a big list.
It's a big list, and there are people that are giving on that wall at all different levels.
Right.
I mean, it's a very wide range from the individual to some of the largest corporations in this area.
And every bit helps.
That's exactly right. And there's, you know, as we make our final push, you know, it's not news to anybody that arts organizations are hit hard in this type of economic climate.
Sure, when it comes time to cut the budget.
We're often the first one to go.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate all those folks that step up and help us. And we ask for the individuals out there that there's still time to help, come on out to a show, enjoy it, or go online and make a donation.
Excellent.
Sounds great. Josh, thanks again for coming by.
Thanks, Paul. Dennis, appreciate it.
Thank you. That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on June 29th with special guest, County Executive Ken Allman, and another 40 minutes of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.